Welcome to Life and Sirens, Behind and On the Scene, a podcast by first responders. We're your hosts, Sophie,
Jamie,
and Aubrey.
The content provided in this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policies or positions of any medical institutions, emergency medical services, or healthcare organizations. Patient privacy is a top priority, and all discussions involving real-world emergency situations are de-identified and altered to ensure confidentiality. Always consult with a qualified healthcare professional or your local EMS protocols before making any decisions regarding patient care or medical practices. Listener discretion is advised, as some topics may include discussions of real-world emergency situations. Welcome back to Life and Sirens. Today we're tackling a common field dilemma, differentiating between COPD versus CHF exacerbations in respiratory emergencies. Misdiagnosing these can lead to ineffective or even harmful treatments, so we're going to break it down. First, we're going to start with the pathophys. So we'll start with COPD, which we all know is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It is a progressive airway disease that includes chronic bronchitis and emphysema. It causes air trapping and poor gas exchange. So 80% is caused by smoking, also from pollution, occupational exposure, and genetic factors. So your signs and symptoms. So if these patients predominantly have emphysema, they're going to be what we call the pink puffers. So they're barrel chested, they're pursed-lipped breathe, there's minimal coughing, and they have quiet lungs. If they have chronic bronchitis, they're the blue bloaters. They have a productive cough. You can hear wheezing and ronchi when you listen to lung sounds, JVD, and peripheral edema.
Can you have both?
You can have both.
That's scary.
So when we look at the pathophys of congestive heart failure, or CHF, it is a pump failure that causes fluid backup into the lungs. That would be your left-sided heart failure. And or systemic congestion, which would be your right-sided heart failure. So there's multiple causes for CHF. The leading ones are hypertension, coronary artery disease, a MI history, valvular disease, and diabetes. So some signs and symptoms of a left-sided CHF, so this is left-sided heart failure, you're going to have pulmonary edema, crackles when you listen to your lung sounds, pink frothy sputum, and orthopnea. So the going from sitting to standing, they're going to get really short of breath. That pulmonary edema, you're also going to probably see some pedal edema as well sometimes. But most of this, what this means is that when blood goes through the lungs and into the heart, the left side that should pump it out to the rest of your body is having a really hard time. So that blood is starting to kind of pool in your lungs and it really stays put in there. Now, if you have right-sided congestive heart failure, that's where you're going to see predominantly JVD. That's where you'll most likely see your pitting edema and ascites. And so because it's the right-sided heart failure, this is going to be a systemic congestion. And so blood coming back to your heart, it kind of gets stuck in that right atrial, right ventricle situation because it gets so backed up. And that's why you're going to have a lot of edema and third spacing of fluids.
Do you know what one of the biggest causes of right-sided heart failure is?
Left-sided heart failure.
Oh, I love that. That was sexy.
Thanks.
Great.
So we've gone over the pathophys. Now, how do you tell the difference between the two?
That is a great question. So for COPD, really the first thing that you're going to look at, that you're going to ask, is history. Obviously, if they have a history of COPD, it is important to rule out a history of CHF and vice versa. If the patient is not so inclined to be able to tell you, or if they do not know that they have a history of COPD and or CHF, there are other clues you can use. So for COPD, you're going to look at if they're a smoker, if they have frequent bronchitis or any frequent lung infections. Usually a COPD exacerbation is not sudden. It doesn't happen super acutely. It kind of happens over a progression of a couple days, and then they get to the point where they are working so hard. Inevitably, that is when we show up. CHF, again, if they do not know that they have a history of this, or now I guess it's more commonly referred to as just heart failure, not congestive heart failure, some high marks that you can look for in their history is MI, hypertension, coronary artery disease, coronary art disease.
Oh my god, their little hearts.
If there's paintings on the wall everywhere, yeah,
their
you know.
Hearts don't paint anymore.
Honestly. Then, I mean, honestly, kinda.
Yeah, kinda.
Aww. It's painting the rest of your body.
Ooh. Ooh. Please keep some of that at least.
Coronary artery disease, weight gain, and typically with a CHF exacerbation or a pulmonary edema, this will be a rapid onset. This will happen very quickly. They will be like, I was sitting here, I was fine, I cannot breathe, I cannot catch my breath. As far as signs and symptoms that you will actually see with these patients, for COPD, you'll have wheezing and or bronchi. You can have diminished breath sounds, so same thought process as like an asthma. A silent chest is a scary chest with these patients. For CHF, you will have crackles, and you can potentially have wheezing with these patients as well. Now, this is where we really start to dig out our investigative tools.
I had one of these not too long ago, and she had a history of asthma, and that was her first diagnosis of CHF was in the ER, but she had wheezing, and it was cardiac wheeze.
And it was a cardiac wheeze.
Keeps me up at night.
That, yeah.
And that was a good example of you got your patient's history, but mm-hmm. she was not diagnosed with CHF yet. Yep. And so what other things did she tell you that could have clued you in?
This definitely could have clued me in. So she'd been having trouble over the last few days. She had a history of, you know, some fluid retention, but that was like very, very like chronic for her, like years and years and years. But before she went to urgent care, she was complaining of some shortness of breath following a dental procedure. So she had been laying on her back for a long time.
Oh. Mm.
And then she just couldn't get her breath after that. So.
But man, that is minimal. That's
yes.
a tough one.
And afterwards, I was like, rendezvoused in the ER with the doctor. And I was like, what in the frick? And he was like, yeah, I know. You're so hype about it because.
Cardiac wheeze.
Yeah, cardiac wheeze. But her symptoms improved minimally with my intervention. But she was like, yes, like I'm really so much better. But I think it's just like she'd been sitting up. We obviously sat her straight up. And yeah, it was CHF.
Dang. Mm-hmm.
How far down the history rabbit hole did you have to go before you found out that it was started with the dental procedure?
Well, she said, what were you doing when it started? And she was like, I was just sitting there. I was like, at your house? And she was like, no, I was at the dental office. So it was actually pretty fast.
Okay. All right.
She wasn't really sitting super low. She just had that wheeze. It was persistent. And honestly, the more I listen to wheezes, the cardiac wheeze is so much more crisp. I think that's the best way to describe mm-hmm. it. I don't know. Someone tell us if that's true.
I feel like the... Someone validate us. I feel like with a reactive airway disease, so like with asthma... and things like that, like you are gonna have diminished sounds as well. Mm-hmm. I think every time that I have misdiagnosed a cardiac wheeze, it has been like, that is a wheeze.
Just wheeze, yeah.
Yeah, and there's really audible. Nothing else. They're not like tripoding, they're not trying to sit themselves forward. Like, it presents differently.
Yeah, but she was just like weak. Mm. I don't think that it was necessarily, but in that moment I didn't think about it, but like, I really just think she was tired.
Yeah, just worn out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a tough one. I would have absolutely called that asthma.
Yeah.
Because she has a history of it.
And I don't, like, hate myself for doing that. Because I try to get all the information from this patient. And that just, I mean, the doc was totally on board with everything we did. She did feel better. But again, I think it was just because we were sitting up. It was odd. It was just odd. And I think that's another thing. Like, if something just, like, feels weird, maybe do some...
Do some
slowing
more digging.
Down and some digging.
Yeah. I think it's also important to note, and I know you guys kind of mentioned this already, but a lot of the times with COPD, it will be paired with like a bronchi as well. Like you'll have that kind of like end inspiratory wheeze, but it'll be junky.
Yeah.
You will hear junk.
Rattling.
Yes. Which I used to get so annoyed in ESO because it in the lung sounds, it has bronchi and wheezing. But I'm like, why can't you just have two separate? Like, it's weird that they're grouped together. But that's probably why. Because it is more indicative of this disease process. So then with CHF, you will have crackles. And I think this is an important note to go ahead and add here. You will have bilateral crackles. We'll get into that a little bit more later. And then you will also possibly have the wheeze. That's the lung sounds that will present with these patients. And as far as your ABCs and your vitals for COPDers, We all know that they have CO2 retention, so you're going to have a high end tidal. That's that hypoxic drive kicking in.
What is that?
Hypoxic drive is where you are stimulated to breathe by low oxygen, right? So people who do not have COPD, their stimulus to breathe is high CO2. Whereas with COPDers, they have CO2 retention. So that is no longer their primary stimulus to breathe. It will be low oxygen. Now let's get into CHF. You will see a low SpO2 despite oxygenation, so despite any supplemental oxygen that you put on these people. You will have a very high blood pressure. Very high, I know, is very relative in this field. But you will see, like, you know, a blood pressure that we would look at where we would be like, you are hypertensive. Like, upper 180s to 200s systolic blood pressures. These people are going to be tachycardic because this is a form of cardiogenic shock, right? All this stress is being put on the heart, so you'll have those high heart rates. Usually, like, in the 130s, 140s is what you'll see.
Mm-hmm. So with your CHF, why would you have a low SpO2 despite oxygen being administered?
Because there is you got no real estate to oxygenate.
Right.
Ooh.
Put that on a t-shirt.
That's fancy. Right. So with CHF, it's not that you have a ventilation issue. You don't have an oxygen issue. There's plenty of it. The problem is that your blood's not moving. So it's not getting to the lungs to get oxygenated to then get sent to the body. And so it is truly a pump issue. But that's why oxygen's not going to help, because that's not your main issue.
And if you are doing a transfer, maybe from a smaller facility, and they've done a chest x-ray, you might be able to read those radiology reports. And for COPD, you might see the hyperinflation or the flattened diaphragm. And then for CHF, pulmonary congestion and cardiomegaly may be some signs that are pointing to CHF rather than COPD. So if that facility has not decided what this is, because oftentimes that does happen, we just know we have a patient in respiratory distress and we can't handle it at this teeny tiny facility, call for transport. So if you need more context clues and you have them, that might be nice.
So we talked about with CHF how you will have crackles when you auscultate your lung sounds. And we kind of made a special note that you will have bilateral crackles. Now we make a point to say that because what other disease pathology will you have that you will also have crackles?
Pneumonia.
So I think that this would be a good time to kind of point out, with pneumonia, you will have usually isolated crackles. So in one side or in one lung field that you'll be able to hear the crackles. And that will also be typically accompanied by a fever. Now, people who have CHF can also have fevers. So when you're really trying to differentiate CHF between pneumonia, the big things are, where do I hear my crackles? Do I have any pedal edema? Do I have a history of CHF? And then your vital signs. So that heart rate and that blood pressure are going to be your big clues to kind of point you in the right direction.
All right. So now that we've talked about the differences between the two and what we might find in each, let's talk about some treatment modalities. So first, COPD. So a lot of our COPDers are already on HOMO2 for the most part, especially if they have significant disease process. And they usually are able to tell you how much oxygen they're on at home. And then also a question you can ask them is what their SpO2 normally is.
How long is your oxygen tubing?
Yes. Is their oxygen tubing in 85 rooms at one time? Very possible. So just remember, we're not aiming for a high O2 in these patients because, honestly, they're living at around 88 to 92%, a lot of them.
Also, don't forget that your COPDers operate on your hypoxic drive. So if we're going to throw their oxygen up to 100%, their body is going to be like, well, no more breathing for us.
Yay.
And so you want to keep it at that, you know, 92 or so range because that's how they remember to breathe.
Yep. So don't be alarmed if you see a low SpO2 reading on your monitor with these patients. Make sure you're also monitoring their end tidal. So if they're on that HOMO2, please switch over to an end tidal cannula if that's something you have available to you. Recently, we found out on a TikTok post that there are many services still not carrying end-tidal CO2 cannulas, which is quite terrifying if you ask me. So if you are in charge of a service's medical direction, protocols, buying of products for a cruise, please consider, don't even consider, please just get end-tidal cannulas. That, thank you for coming to my TED Talk. So obviously bronchodilators, we use albuterol and ipratropium, that's Duo-Neb at our service. We primarily use albuterol. Albuterol is kind of the catch-all neb treatment. Steroids, solumedrol is something that we kind of see that is going out of favor, and we're moving towards dexamethasone or Decadron. And then we can also provide patients with magnesium. I don't know, is this a regional thing? Like, we do this in our region, and this isn't a thing that is really common across the country. Do you guys know?
I think it is common across the country, but I hear that it's going out of favor. Like, I know even around here, MAG is kind of falling out of favor.
MAG kind of got popular during COVID. For our service, and I think a lot of other services, we would do everything we could to prevent from doing a neb treatment. We even got meter dose inhalers.
Yeah.
Which is so bizarre. So that's kind of why we were like, MAG, MAG, MAG. So when you have COPD patients, I know most just frontline ambulances typically only carry CPAP, but if you have BiPAP capabilities, that's going to be better for these patients because, like we talked about before, they are CO2 retainers. So if you just have constant pressure, they're going to have a hard time getting rid of that CO2. That's why we prefer BiPAP, because it gives them a break to kind of have that offload of that CO2. And then finally, we talked about this as well, antibiotics, if absolutely necessary for those pneumonia patients. These patients are specifically very susceptible for acquiring pneumonia.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the chronic bronchitis, COPDers, that aspect of it, essentially they're going to have like a lot of inflammation, a lot of mucus, a lot of just like junk retention, and that is most likely going to lead to pneumonia, so don't be surprised there.
And then for CHF treatment, high flow O2 and CPAP, especially those patients who are pretty far down the hole and they have been working pretty hard, they're very fluid overloaded. This is when you choose CPAP over BiPAP. You need that continuous pressure to pop open those alveoli and keep them open, because they're drowning. Diuretics, so for us, we have furosemide, so Lasix. That's a great option, and I will let you know, please don't not give Lasix because you think it's not going to work fast enough. That's just weird. We've already talked about how weird that the way of thinking is. Like, and honestly, we have very short transports, and by the time we get to the hospital, which is like 15 minutes after they've been after they've received the Lasix dose, they are like, give me a freaking urinal. They're like yelling at you that they're gonna pee.
Yeah, I know that like the clinical study says that the therapeutic onset for Lasix is like 30-45 minutes an hour. But we actually see it pretty quickly.
Absolutely.
And just like in an anecdotal sense, like we have all experienced the, I have to pee so bad, please give it to me.
Yeah. And even if that's not happening with your patient, the earlier we can get these medications on board, the better their outcome will be. Hopefully the shorter their hospital stay. Like, just use your brain. That's just how that works.
And with Lasix, I feel like we've established that it's a pretty important med for CHFers. What is something that you want to be cautious about with Lasix?
So, this is crazy. So, if you give Lasix too quickly, and it's usually, I think most are recommended, it's like 5 to 10 minutes. Like, it's a very slow push. Don't slam Lasix, because you can go deaf and blind and cause cerebral edema. Scary.
Not good.
A lot of it's temporary, but some of it's not. So, do you want to risk it? No.
Right. So, it's a medication that we need to be cautious of and careful with. But we have brains, so let's not slam it, and let's keep that med on our trucks, because it is helpful for our patient. We don't necessarily see the effects of it, but that patient does.
It reduces your preload, so we like that. And if you don't have that, you have another option, which is nitroglycerin. Usually in most ambulances, you'll see it, the sublingual dose, and that will reduce afterload. So if you gotta pop a nitro in their mouth and then pop that CPAP on, at least we're doing something. It does helps a little bit, not as drastically as Lasix will, but it's still something. It's better than nothing, and usually these patients are in dire straits. And then inotropes. So these are the situations where dopamine might be an okay choice, and dobutamine. So that's only if your patient is like truly in cardiogenic shock and we are really behind the eight ball. So.
Is milrinone still in favor for like a cardiogenic shock that is...
Yeah, I've transferred some patients on milrinone. I think that you see milrinone more than dopamine.
I would think so. I think everyone decided that dopamine is like the devil presser. Yeah. Like everyone's mad at it.
There's too many.
Right. But yeah, during transfers, especially when it is cardiac related, they don't want to increase the workload of the heart, but they need to make the output better. A lot of times you'll see milrinone. It's not necessarily a presser, but it kind of is. It's like in its own category.
Yeah. It's a cute name, too.
It is cute.
So what do you do if you have let's just say that you walk in the door and this person is like, I am having a CHF exacerbation. Like, they can just tell you that. And they are so far down the tubes that they are now hypotensive. We are no longer hypertensive. We are hypotensive. We want to go ahead and jump on the nitro and the CPAP, but obviously both of those things are going to decrease our cardiac output, and we are already in a decompensated state. Let's say that we don't carry a presser that would be appropriate for this situation. Do you absolutely outlaw, strike the hand that toucheth the normal saline?
So no. So this is something that I actually had to learn from a physician. We brought a patient in. I was like, their pressure is borderline. This is what I wanted to do, but I was really cautious to do because I don't want to increase their inner thoracic pressure and actually make their cardiac output worse. And so I'm in a bind, and they asked me if I gave fluid, and I said, this is a CHF.
Don't look at me like that, you crazy man.
Are you trying to get me in trouble? Yeah, I said, this is a trap.
This is a trap.
This is a trick question.
This is a trap. And it was not a trap. This seems honestly rather intuitive, but it's been drilled into our heads that these patients are fluid overloaded. Well, the problem is that these patients are third spacing a lot of fluid because it is sitting and it's not really having anywhere to go in the heart. So a lot of these patients are actually fluid down. They are to a level of dehydrated. So you can give them fluid. Now, you don't want to pressure bag 1,000 ml bolus into them because clearly we are having issues. But you can give them fluid in order to kind of raise that pressure because a lot of times they're third spacing fluid, but they still need fluid.
Yeah.
So that way, if you can get their pressure to a place where they can at least have CPAP, that's going to benefit you much better.
Yeah, because a lot of these patients are like chronically on diuretics. So, I mean, there's a very good chance that they need some.
Yeah.
Also, a lot of them pay attention to the cardiac monitor. Obviously, you're going to be doing that in this situation, I hope. But because these patients are so diluted sometimes, and they're on Lasix, they can develop things like hypocalcemia, hyponatremia, and hypokalemia. So weird things can happen with the monitor. So just think about it.
Just, you know, look
don't,
at that thing.
Don't freak out about it. Just think about it.
Just do the 12 lead.
Just do the 12 lead.
Okay, well, let's give you guys a scenario, and you tell us if this is a COPD or CHF exacerbation. You are dispatched to a 67-year-old male for difficulty breathing. They have a history of smoking, hypertension, and diabetes. Upon your arrival, you note wheezing. You have a respiratory rate of 28, an SpO2 of 84% on room air. Their skin is pink, they are anxious appearing, and you find them in the tripod position. Upon your exam, you get a set of vitals, which are as follows. Your pressure is 168 over 92. You have a heart rate of 98. As previously stated, you have wheezing bilaterally in all lung fields. Their skin is pink and warm, and your end title is 55.
I think that's our... We've won. We know what it is now.
Ding, ding, ding. Mm-hmm. Poor man's art line has won again.
That is a COPD-er. So, you're in the house. They're still sitting on their couch, yelling at you because they can't breathe and they're mad that you're staring at them. What treatments are you going to start?
Well, first, you're going to apply oxygen.
How are you going to do that, Soph?
Well, I would love for you to put an end-tidal CO2 cannula on this patient.
Mm.
And then I would love for you to a nub mask with 2.5 of albuterol in 3 mLs of normal saline.
That was such a good textbook answer.
And then we're going to get a line established. And I think that we're going to recheck our vitals, make sure we're heading in the right direction. Maybe after that, albuterol's been cooking. Re-listen to some lung sounds. If things are minimally improving or not improving at all, we may add a steroid. Maybe some dexamethasone. So I tried to combine dex and decadron. Usually that's a 10 milligram dose. And then, man, if we are really still not working out, we might consider the mag and maybe some BiPAP. Just depends how your patient's presenting and how they're improving or declining.
How would, if you don't carry BiPAP and you pop a CPAP on this patient, how would that affect them differently than BiPAP would?
So if we place a patient who's in a COPD exacerbation to the point of needing that positive pressure, it's probably, I mean, it's going to open everything up, but it's going to keep it open. It's not going to give us the benefits of improved gas exchange necessarily, where we're offloading some of that CO2. So that's something to think about. But if it's all you got, it's all you got. Which, it isn't doesn't have to be all you got, because there are BiPAP / CPAP models, devices that you can purchase for your ambulance that connect just like any other CPAP, and you don't need a ventilator. It just has a valve where you very simply can switch from CPAP to BiPAP. Mm-hmm. So that is something to think about for services that, you know, either don't carry vents, don't have, you know, a pay scale or a protocol for vent medics or critical care medics. You still can do this. You just gotta think out of the box sometimes. And now our favorite part of the episode. The part where Larry comes out and sings a silly song. If you know what that reference is, let's get married.
I almost broke out into the cheeseburger song. It took a lot of self-restraint.
If you look up the trap remix of the VeggieTales intro song on Spotify, your life will change.
It's actually banging.
It is. Yeah. So, trivia questions. Let's get back to it. First of all, let's talk about some statistics. Because I love statistics.
I love a good stat.
According to the CDC, from a article in 2023, COPD affects 16 million Americans, and it's the fourth leading cause of death.
Jeez.
Dang.
Don't smoke cigarettes. All right? That's all we got to say about that one. CHF affects 6.2 million adults in the U.S., according to the AHA, and it's one of the leading cause of hospital readmissions.
Which makes sense.
And then, according to the New England Journal of Medicine, from a 2021 article, CPAP and CHF can reduce intubation rates by 60%.
Dang. That's pretty impressive.
When in doubt, CPAP.
Yeah.
That's significant. And then, according to Gold Report from 2023, CPD patients have a 50% five-year mortality rate after a hospitalization.
Whoa, really?
That's wild.
That's terrifying.
That is really wild.
But you also have to think about a lot of the COPDers you bring to the hospital don't get admitted. Like, they just need, like, acute intervention.
That's true.
So if they do end up getting admitted, mm-hmm. that's an indicator that they're pretty far down the COPD rabbit hole.
And then our trivia questions. What condition is more likely to require or need Lasix? COPD or CHF?
CHF.
Bleh. I don't even know why we came up with that one. Okay. What is the best non-invasive ventilation for COPD?
BiPAP.
Perfect. Why is high-flow oxygen risky for COPD patients?
The hypoxic drive and the existence of free radicals.
Oh, yeah. Those free radicals, baby.
Bad news bears.
Oh, fun fact. Depends what monitor you have, but on a Zoll, the highest end-tidal CO2 reading that I've ever seen is 136.
Ballin'. Ooh.
And I was like, I didn't know that. Because on the life pack, it goes to 99.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I was like, that. What?
Yeah, the life pack will just say greater than 99 mm-hmm. if it's higher than that.
Well, there you have it. There's the difference between COPD and CHF. Very common medical emergencies, especially with those COPDers. We see that pretty much every shift, I'd say. So I hope this helped. And if you have any stories that you'd like to write in and talk to us about, especially on this topic, please send those to lifeandsirenspod@gmail.com. And if you have any other stories, want to chat, need advice, and want to be featured on the show, we'd also like to hear those too. send those to the same spot. Follow us on social media, and we'll see you next time. Stay safe and don't smoke.
And listen to lung sounds, homies. 3 nerds trying to bring you content that you might actually care about.